Cryptids and Milfs. I'm your host, Amanda.
And I'm Ella, and you are entering the sovereign country of Skelly Nation, where the flashlights are flickery and the blazers are boxy.
This is an X-Files rewatch podcast, where we rewatch the X-Files, and then we have a little bit of a chat about it. And guess what, guys? This is my first time watching it.
That's amazing, because this is my fourth time watching it.
We should say that more often. I feel like we never talk about that.
Actually, I feel like heading into season eight, I'm not sure if I've seen the rest of the show. I think I've seen it less.
That's fair.
It might be my second or third.
We have to adjust.
All right. We'll find out. My memory's not as strong about the back half.
Fair enough.
Get to that when we get to it.
Indeed.
We're still in season seven. Before we get into the episode, this is your last chance. If you're listening to this when the episode is released, this Sunday is the deadline for submitting season seven questions. That's April 21st. If you want to send something in, do it by this Sunday.
Get on it.
And if you're listening to it after April 21st, forget it.
Don't even try.
You're too late.
You can still
just
send
throw
us
your podcast device in the trash.
Oh.
Just throw it away.
Well, they can still listen.
If you're listening to this a couple years from now in the back catalog, just toss it out.
The year is 2035. Smoking craters have engulfed the world.
That's right.
And one thing remains.
And one man.
Skelly Nation.
Okay. That's fun. I like that.
Yeah.
We should explore that later.
Yeah. Come.
But in the meantime, should we talk about the X-Files?
Let's talk about this episode.
Okay. Tonight is it's a bit of a wish fulfillment night. It's an invisible night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big night for big boats.
Yes. Big night for big boats should be the subtitle of this episode.
Yeah.
I like that. That's special.
Okay. Because we are talking about season 7, episode 21. Now I practiced this. Je suis.
Beautiful. Oh, mon Dieu. Okay. Beautiful. I don't speak French.
Well, I don't either.
Let me tell you where I'm going with this. I think that woman is Genia. Are you familiar with that term?
No.
It's the feminine for genie, as in a demon or spirit from Middle Eastern folklore. Yeah, except Barbara Eden never killed anybody.
This episode aired on May 14th, 2000. It was written by Vince Gilligan and directed by Vince Gilligan.
That crazy bastard.
I know, he's getting his chance.
Oh, yeah.
I like how in the back half of the season, they're just like, you get an episode. You get an episode.
Everybody gets an episode.
Yeah, kind of.
Did they know if they had been renewed yet or not?
I could be wrong, but I think at this point they still thought it was the last season.
Okay, that'll do it then.
Yeah.
They really are just throwing episodes at everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This episode takes place in Crèvecoeur and Olivet, Missouri. Forget what I just said about speaking French.
That was beautiful.
I said Crèvecoeur.
I mean, that's probably how it's pronounced in Missouri.
That's true.
Okay. You don't say Paris, Texas.
And if you try,
Paris,
you're
Texas.
A dickhead.
Yeah.
Yes. In a short plot synopsis, Mulder and Scully's encounter with a man and his handicapped brother lead them to an indifferent genie whose willingness to grant wishes belies a deeper motive.
Well, shall we hop into... You feel like...
You can't do invisible meat.
You took all the adjectives again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'm sorry.
The invisible meat of the episode.
No!
Can we do that? Have we done that one before?
We definitely have.
The berugged.
The big boated meat.
In a rug. Berugged.
The berugged.
Boat?
Yeah.
What? No. No, I'm confused.
Boat?
Meat of the episode.
I would love to jump into the berugged meat.
Okay.
But that just sounds like rugged. But I know what
it
you
does.
Mean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you really have to.
Berugged?
Berugged meat.
Don't pronounce the E. It's just
okay.
Berugged.
Berugged meat.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yum, yum, yum. That's actually where I store all my meat.
Mm-hmm.
Rolled up rug in the corner.
Is that like when you have to clean a wound with it, where you have to like scrape it? What's that? Debriding.
Ugh.
It's like debriding.
Gross. Yeah, I debride all my meat from the store that I always buy.
Okay.
Anyway, we open in
all right.
Crèvecoeur, Missouri. We're on a lot of like a lot with a bunch of storage units on it. And we've got a manager driving around in a golf cart, clearly calling for an employee named Anson and, like, you know, trying to get a hold of him on this walkie-talkie, we suspect that Anson might be skiving off work because this manager seems grumpy. Anson is indeed non-responsive because he is hiding out in an empty storage unit reading a boat magazine and dreaming of a better life.
The title of the magazine is Big Boats.
Hell yeah. I do like big boats, and I cannot lie.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Clearly does not want to be here, does not care about this job. The manager finds Anson and chews him out for being lazy and not amounting to anything, and how he's never going to get one of those big boats if he doesn't learn how to put in a good day's work. And Anson does mutter, "Shut up." He does not have a lot of confidence behind it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the manager does the thing where he's like, "What did you say? I couldn't hear you." And he doesn't repeat it. But,
yeah.
But you know, he's clearly not a fan of his manager. The manager says, you know, like, you better clear out this one storage unit where I assume someone's just like stopped paying the bills or whatever.
Well, I think he died.
Okay. He died. So he's definitely stopped paying the bills. And yeah. He's like, you better clean out the storage unit or there's going to be hell to pay. And Anson glares at the manager, but he does go off to the storage unit to do his job.
Mm-hmm.
Finally.
I feel like in this whole episode of especially these two guys, this whole episode is just chock-a-block full of, like, classic Vince characters.
Oh, yeah.
These guys are Vince Gilligan characters, you know what I mean?
These are some Vince boys.
Yeah,
I did write
really
that.
Are.
Yeah, I wrote that later on. There's a lot of Vince boys in here.
Yeah, and I love that.
Yeah.
So Anson heads to the storage compartment in... Compartment? What's it called?
Unit.
Unit. Mm-hmm. The storage unit in question. It is full of crap. There's dusty chandeliers, plastic-covered furniture, cobwebs everywhere. It looks like a bunch of junk. But Anson starts dragging out a big old rug that's rolled up, and then when he moves it, it, like, kicks, and there's, like, a sound like there's somebody in there. So he freaks out, he unrolls the carpet, and inside is a woman. Huh? And he kind of, like, pokes her, and she wakes up.
Mm.
So
she's a lot.
Who is this? I don't know.
It's me.
It's me.
It's me, Mario. That would be pretty cute if she did say that.
Yeah.
A different episode.
Sure. So later on, the boss comes rolling up, trying to find Anson. He's convinced that he's still not pulling his weight. And then he finds that the storage unit has still not been cleaned out at all. So he yells for Anson. That's it. It's the last straw. He's definitely fired. And then as he's yelling, he stops suddenly. He turns around and his whole mouth is gone. Just skin over it.
Ugh.
Like, he never had a mouth to begin with.
Gross.
Hmm.
Doesn't look fun.
Hmm.
I feel like that would mess you up.
Probably.
A little bit.
Probably.
Yeah. I have no mouth and I must scream, etc.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It happened to Loki, and look what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Credits over. We get to the X-Files office where Mulder is interviewing the boss about this case. Scully arrives and is surprised to see a random extra dude in the office, but Mulder introduces Scully to the manager. And then when the manager turns around to shake her hand, he reveals his horrifying visage, and Scully's like, "Oh my god, what the fuck is wrong with you?" She doesn't say that, but
it's in her eyes.
She's thinking it.
Yes.
Because he has, like, a reconstructed mouth with, like, sutures in it where they've clearly, like, tried to create a mouth from what was an expanse of flesh.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
You just cut it open and try to make lips.
Hope for the best.
Ooh.
It doesn't look great.
Yikes.
And he, you know, is, like, diligently avoiding words with M's in them and things like that. Mulder gives Scully some background information, and for some reason, I just noted this because I thought it was cute. I don't know why he points out that Missouri is the show me state. Was that, like...
I guess
this guy's showing him something.
Yeah, I guess so.
People love the show me state, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he gives Scully this background, and then the manager says, like, "They told me that you were the best people to understand my situation,"
mm-hmm.
which is
the
fair.
Only.
You post about this kind of thing happening on the internet and someone's like, "You got to go talk to Mulder."
Do you think that they have, like, fans?
Yeah. Doesn't Mulder canonically?
Does he?
Didn't he, like, back in season one or something, have people on the internet who liked him? Am I making that up?
Wait,
was that something we invented?
I don't know. When did this happen? I guess I believe it. I just don't remember this.
Wasn't it like the group Max was in? Didn't they like know him, know about Mulder and like him?
Oh, you're right. Okay. He did. Yeah. Okay. Max knew who he was.
Yeah.
Okay. So they do have groupies.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't
know
about Scully, but
she's part of it.
At this point, probably.
Yeah.
She's been on X-Cops. She's got fans.
I'm surprised that when they show up to a case, there aren't like people following them around, you know?
Yeah. Especially after the big movie.
Mm-hmm.
You would think.
Well, maybe that's going to change everything.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Once it's, yeah, like, sees wide release.
Sure. Yeah.
That would make sense. So, anyway, we learned that this condition of being mouthless came on very suddenly about a month ago, and that the manager is very convinced that Anson, his old employee, is clearly responsible somehow, because he told the manager to shut up once. Again, real Mulder vibes, where he is correct, but does not sound like he has a lot of proof or reason for believing it.
Yeah.
Mulder also uses the phrase stricken by an X-File.
Yes.
Well, he doesn't say stricken by an X-File, but, you know, he says stricken. And we were wondering if that's better than our beset by an X-File. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're addressing this.
Yeah.
Because it's a hot, hot topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. I think I like beset more.
Okay.
But if stricken is the official term, then, you know, I can bend to popular opinion. But but personally, I do like beset more.
Okay. Write in and tell us if you prefer to refer to people as being beset or stricken by X-Files.
Well, what do you like?
I kind of like beset more, too.
Yeah.
The more
I
thought about it, I think beset's funnier.
It just sounds funnier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just, it carries with it an aura of like, oh gosh,
this
is happening again.
Stricken can be serious.
Yeah, it's serious.
It's usually
in this case.
Serious.
Yeah.
Stricken by a medical event or something. Beset is just like, it sounds vaguely inconvenient.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. So we learned that Anson Stokes briefly went missing after he walked off the job, and then he showed back up a few days later and refused to be interviewed by the police related to this case of the missing mouth. And apparently he told the police kind of indignantly that they have nothing on him. And then Mulder's like, well, you know, to be fair, they don't have anything on him about your mouth disappearing. But the manager is just like, my insurance is not going to pay for this new mouth. I demand justice. So the boot crew are on the case.
They are. So they head to Olivet, Missouri, to a trailer park where Anson lives. And so they're kind of walking and talking. Mulder is saying that he knows that this might not be a crime and Anson might not have anything to do with it, but he still wants to check it out. It's not every day you run across a mouthless man.
True.
And then Scully, it's time for Scully's Silly Science Corner.
Hell yeah.
We haven't gotten one of those in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we don't give Scully enough credit for how insane her theories are, like in the complete opposite way that Mulder's are.
Yeah.
Like, she swings the total opposite way.
It's amazing.
It's still, yeah.
It's also, incredible. Yes, absurd.
Yes, because Scully's explanation for what happened to this guy is something called small mouth, which is definitely real. It's like an overproduction of collagen that can reduce a person's mouth to a tiny opening. And she's like, yeah, this could have happened in a couple seconds.
come on, Scully.
Small mouth.
Come on.
Small mouth.
Come on. It's genuinely, the genie is less far-fetched than this.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, Mulder's like, I mean, I guess, but it does take months to develop. And Scully says that she thinks that what they're dealing with here is medical or physiological, not criminal. So there's really no reason for them to be here. But Mulder is very intrigued. He just wants to find out why Anson didn't want to talk to the police. He's on the case. So they roll up to Anson's home, which is just like a trailer, but it has a massive yacht right next to it.
Yeah.
Looks a little inconvenient.
Yeah.
Like, you can't move it anywhere.
Not super close to water, apparently.
Yeah.
As far as we can tell.
It's a little out of place.
Yeah. I feel like I had a thought. Oh, I love how, like, obviously it's just a convention of writing, but it's always funny when Scully, like, waits until they're literally in Missouri, walking up to the house before she's like, I don't know, this doesn't feel worth our time. Like, obviously, again, it's a writing convention. It's just funny to imagine that she, like, checks in at the airport. Mm-hmm. She sits down in her little seat, gets off the airplane in wherever they get off, and rents the car.
Yeah.
Drives all the way here. And then she's like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, or it's like the episodes where they're at the crime scene and Mulder is telling her about the case. Like, they've arrived, they flew all the way here, but he didn't tell her what the case is about until they got there. Yeah. It's like, okay.
It's a little secret.
Yeah, I don't know.
Again, that's just how writing is. So they go inside the trailer and, they don't. We go inside the trailer. What a silly thing to say. We go inside the trailer and see Anson and his brother, who notice the Boo crew checking out the boat and assume they are IRS agents. And these two, I mean, we've already met Anson, but these two are dumb. They're like Jesse Pinkman levels of dumb.
More than they're Badger and Skinny Pete levels.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a real proto Badger Skinny Pete.
Yes, absolutely. Like, no motivation, dumbass stoners in their late 20s to early 30s.
I kind of love them.
I do too. I mean, yes, I'm saying this with love. To be clear, they're dumb, but I love them. So the brother Leslie we meet, he can't walk, and so he's using like a motorized cart tricycle thing with a big flexible stick with a flag sticking up to warn cars and stuff, which is literally only important in so much as I like the visual gags of it getting caught in door frames. I don't know why that felt very Vince Gilligan to me.
Yeah.
But it did.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, just the springing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so Mulder and Scully knock on the door, and the brother Leslie answers and claims that Anson is not home. Scully introduces them as FBI agents, and the brother just instantly gets super defensive and nervous, and he's like, the boat's not ours, we're just holding it for someone, and they definitely pay the taxes on it.
They didn't even ask about that.
Didn't ask about the boat. Scully's like, okay, cool, awesome, thank you. They learn that he is Leslie Stokes, Anson's brother, and Mulder kind of sneaks a little peek inside the trailer and sees the woman from the carpet is just, like, standing in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. He greets her and looks a little suspicious about the situation, but tells Leslie that they're not there about the boat. They just want to talk to Anson about his old boss. Scully is like, yeah, do you know anything about your brother's old boss's unfortunate situation?
You ever heard of small mouth?
Yeah, I think it's an overproduction of collagen that happened instantly. I am the normal one. And, you know, she just mentions, like, unfortunate situation, and Leslie is immediately like, oh, yeah, the mouth thing. That's just chemicals.
Yeah, you know.
That's just chemicals. The Boo crew seem fairly unimpressed by this, but Leslie continues to ramble about how there was a meth lab in a storage unit that could have caused this, and then he slams the door shut. Meth lab?
Mm-hmm. In a storage unit?
Vincent? Come on. The Boo crew, like, chat on the porch a little bit after the door has been slammed in their face, and Mulder is like, now I see what's going on here. And Scully looks skeptical, and then he just, like, shakes his head sheepishly.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cute.
He don't know.
He does not.
So the Boo crew head back to the storage unit in question, and they open it up. Everything is still as Anson left it. The big carpet is unrolled on the floor. They note that they don't smell any weird chemicals, and they both still have their lips. Hallelujah.
No small mouth.
No.
What if they got small mouth?
That would be sad.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have been safe and come in with, like, lip protection, just in case.
What does lip protection look like?
I don't know.
Fascinating.
Some sort of hazmat unit, but just for their mouth. I don't know.
It feels like something they would own, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Come on, they care about their lips.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
Come on.
You can't be an FBI agent without luscious lips.
Absolutely not. So that's the only reason Skinner's still leaving them around.
Exactly. For,
you know?
He actually can't fire them, even if he wants to. Mm-hmm. Regulation. Those lips. Mm-hmm. They cannot leave government property.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more like if they didn't have the lips, then... Like, that was the incentive to keep them.
Oh,
and if they didn't
I
have them, he'd be like, you're gone.
That
now
makes
I can
sense.
Fire
yeah.
you.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
That makes sense. So they're, like, searching the unit, looking around. Everything's left as it was. Mulder finds an old calendar from 1978, so all this stuff is super old. Scully does note that the furniture is really expensive, though, and there's a lot of money sitting around here, so maybe something valuable is missing. Maybe Anson stole something, and that's why he's been so suspicious, and that's why he ended up with a giant yacht in his driveway. And Mulder says, perhaps, but that still doesn't explain what happened to Mr. Smallmouth. But he does find a photo of the previous owner of the storage unit. He's like this big guy with like a really garish white suit, and he's got two blonde supermodels hanging off his arms. And then sitting in the background is the mystery woman from the trailer. But the weird thing is, this is an old picture and she hasn't aged a day.
Wow.
Mysterious.
Good genes.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back to the trailer where Anson is all bummed about something. He is ranting about two down and nothing to show for it. Leslie points out that he's at least got this boat, but Anson is angry and he's like, what good is that? The boat is like a, but he's struggling to think of a word to describe what the boat is to him. And the woman who has been sitting there fiddling with a remote shaped like a buxom woman's torso and ass.
Busty babe remote. It's classy.
So she can channel surf. That does also feel like something Badger and Skinny Pete would have.
Yeah.
So she's just like half paying attention to them, half paying attention to the TV. And she supplies the term white elephant and defines it for Anson as well. And he's like, yeah, exactly. That's what I meant. And then he's all mad because he's like, why did you give me the boat when you knew that it would be so useless? And the woman says, you asked for it, and you didn't specify that you wanted it to be, like, in water and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, not my problem.
You gotta be specific.
You gotta be specific. So we're starting to get the feeling that she is a genie, basically. At this point. I feel like we know at this point, right?
Yes.
We're talking three wishes. She's coming out of rugs.
Yeah. I don't know. We calling her Jen?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds good.
That's what Mulder calls her later.
I guess. Yeah, he does. Short for... Janaya?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so she just seems like very bored and annoyed by having to spend time with these two morons, essentially. Leslie suggests that Anson could just like wish that the boat was gone if it's more trouble than it's worth, but you know, this is his last wish. He's not going to waste his third and final wish on that. Come on. Mm-hmm. Come on. He's like, turns off the TV so the genie can't keep watching that, and he's like, I gotta concentrate. Jen suggests that Anson could, you know, give the manager his mouth back. Would be a nice way to spend his third wish, potentially. Leslie suggests that he could wish for money or something that would generate money, like a money machine, for example.
He looks very pleased with himself when he comes up with that idea. Like, he's being really smart.
Hell
he's
yeah.
Like, no one's ever thought of that before.
I wish I had a money machine, am I right?
Yeah.
No. The genie kind of like suggests, as if it is an incredibly obvious thing, dramatically pointing her arms to gesture, that perhaps his third wish could be, you know, making Leslie be able to walk again.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's wild. The brothers do not understand her implication because she doesn't say it. She just points it at Leslie in his cart and is like, you could, maybe try this.
Yeah.
But they ignore that. And then instead, Anson finally comes up with the perfect third wish.
Yeah.
Nothing can go wrong with this one.
It's really smart.
Oh, yeah. He wishes to be able to become invisible at will.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, it's going to give me an advantage on picking up like stock tips and stuff.
That is so funny, you know?
Like that.
Yeah.
Stock tips.
You know, stock tips.
Being invisible will help you get stock tips.
Yeah.
They're going to be millionaires.
Absolutely they are.
I think the genie sees through this and realizes it is a little bit more locker room focused because this guy is a creep. So the genie does do it. She says, done, and it is done. And he asks, like, oh, my clothes are going to turn invisible too, right? And she's like, nope.
Mm-mm.
Dude didn't specify that. So now he's got to be like a werewolf in Twilight and just rip off his clothes and keep stashes of clothes around town.
Yeah. Yep.
Just like Twilight.
Just like Twilight.
So he starts undressing and she like is looking away disgusted. But once he is naked, he does turn invisible and he's like goofing with Leslie. He's like, oh, my God, I'm over here. Which is fun. I mean, that's what I would do too, to be fair.
Leslie is loving it too.
Leslie's loving it.
He's like, this is awesome.
They get along.
Yeah.
They're doing great.
Yeah.
He's super excited too. Anson leaves the house naked, invisible, and starts like running around, and we see like, you know, trash cans knocked over and stuff to indicate where he is running, even though we can't see him. Leslie, you know, still really excited, cheers his brother on, and then goes back into the house, and in the background, we see like the genie is putting on her glasses, and then she vanishes, and Leslie is shocked that she is gone.
Mm. They're on their own.
Yep.
So Anson is running all over the place. He's having a great time. He does see some sexy ladies across the street. So he does hit the button and waits for the light to turn. So, yep. You know, he's a little responsible.
He's a pedestrian.
But then he starts crossing the street. He's very pleased with himself. He's very excited. But he is invisible. So he does get squished by a semi-truck pretty bad. Yeah. So that's sad. Later on, Anson is dead, but still invisible. There's like a bunch of flies buzzing around the body. And then some poor biker just goes flying when he hits the body.
So sad.
It's a pretty good gag.
It was a good gag.
Yeah. He's just like, wah!
That would be surprising.
Yes.
I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. So later on, we cut to Scully waiting in a morgue looking, I don't know, like skeptical and apprehensive, maybe.
Confused. Yeah, she's just like, I can't believe this is happening, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah. And some orderlies wheel in what appears to be like an empty body cart or whatever they're called, and they ask Scully for permission to leave as quickly as possible, kind of like stealing terrified glances at the cart this whole time.
That couldn't be me. I'd be like, can I stay?
Right? Like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
But they, I guess, haven't been inoculated to 7 years of weirdness. So she lets them go, and then she starts approaching the cart and like gingerly touching it and running her fingers across something invisible but very solid on this cart.
It's just like a fun effect where she touches the body and she looks like she's touching nothing, but like we can see the pressure on her finger. That's
pretty
neat.
Good. Must be glass or something, I guess.
Yeah, must be.
Probably. It's pretty cool. We got some mime school graduate Jillian Anderson action here.
Yeah.
She's probably not a mime school graduate.
She's still in debt from that mime school, you know. She has to use it somehow.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah, you think she would be able to pay it back by now after being on a hit TV show.
You don't know how expensive mime school is.
It is ridiculous.
More expensive than Ivy League.
Mon Dieu,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Mon Dieu.
Mm-hmm.
She goes and grabs some like yellow powder and a brush and starts brushing Anson's invisible body and looks very tripped out, but also like she's kind of dancing a little bit and going like, ooh.
I think she's just having fun painting.
Yeah.
You know? She's like, whoa.
I'm painting a little invisible man. This is pretty wild.
She's doing her arts and crafts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun time. You know, she doesn't get to do this very often.
Mm-hmm.
Usually if you paint a dead body, they come in and say that that's really weird.
Yes.
And you shouldn't do that.
Yes.
But this time,
she's got no witnesses.
Nope. She can do what she wants. I don't know. Like, how did they... Did she just get this body because she was in town and they're like, a weird thing happened and the Bigfoot division's in town? Obviously, they don't know it's Anson.
Yes. Unless Leslie reported him missing. But he probably wouldn't do that because he didn't know he got killed.
Yeah.
I think it's just because something super weird happened.
Yeah, that feels right.
And I mean, usually if they're in town, they're investigating a case, something really weird happens. Yeah. It's probably related.
It's true. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So she like, she continues brushing more and more powder onto Anson, and it becomes clearer and clearer that it is an invisible corpse, and her bean is getting freaked as this happens.
It's a pretty cool effect.
Yeah.
I was into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like... It looks like nothing, and then powder appears. Or powder lands, faces appear.
Yeah.
Yes. Hmm. Well, later, Scully has managed to paint Anson's entire body, and Mulder's are here observing. And he says that she missed a spot because he can see straight through to his ass. And Scully confirms that this is indeed Anson Stokes. The dental records match. Not... Totally, I guess they took a mold. Is that how they do it?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess they could do that. So Anson was found a mile from his house. It seemed like he'd been hit by a car. And Mulder, who always loves to state the obvious, is like, and he's invisible. And Scully's like, yeah, man, I have seen some amazing things in the 7 years we have been working together, but this one takes the cake. This might change the boundaries of science. This could prove the X-Files.
Just like,
you know?
Gibson.
Just like
and
Gibson.
And that disc.
And
I don't know, everything.
Everything. And the, whatever, the biogenesis thingy.
Mm-hmm, yep.
What was that? The shard.
Shard.
Whatever.
Pottery shard. I don't know, whatever it was.
Yeah. And Mulder says that this is indeed amazing, but it has nothing to do with science. He has done a background check on the guy in the photo for the storage unit, the one who previously owned it. So that guy's name was Harry Flanken, and he was like this amazing overnight success. In 1977, his net worth was just $30,000, but the next year it was $30 million. So clearly he lucked into something, and then he did die in an interesting way. He died of chronic morbid tubescence. Tumescence, not tubescence.
No.
He was admitted to the hospital with an extreme priapic condition. They even had to widen the door to wheel him into the hospital room. Doesn't happen to somebody every day.
That happened to a guy I knew.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a genie?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. That explains it.
And yeah. And something else that was pretty inconvenient.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So that is strange, but what does this have to do with our case? Scully asks. And Mulder is pretty sure that this mystery woman is the link because she's in the picture. They saw her in the trailer. But he cannot find any information on her. So he thinks that she must be responsible for all of this. They need to talk to her. But Scully says, you can do that. I'm going to stay here with this body. I do not want to leave him unguarded. This is truly amazing. I have evidence theft PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I am not
Fair.
Taking my eyes off of him. So Mulder heads out.
Nothing's going to happen to this body.
Nope.
It's all good.
Nope.
Mulder goes to the trailer and breaks the news of Anson's death to his brother, Leslie. Sorry.
Did we see, before we went inside, their boat did get graffitied. It just said, you suck.
That's so mean.
That's sad.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Who would do that? It was me.
You would.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
It was so high up. I don't know how they got so high up on the boat.
A ladder. I don't know.
Scared of ladders.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. Anyway, so Leslie does not seem to be shocked that Anson is invisible, which is, you know, an interesting thing to note. Mulder asks about the woman's whereabouts, who had been in the trailer before, and reveals that he thinks the woman is Janiyah.
Or Jin.
Jin, which is a female genie. And Leslie is very confused about what Mulder is talking about until Mulder hums the theme to I Dream of Jeannie. And Leslie, like, hums along. And it's a special little moment until Mulder suddenly gets serious again. And he's like, except that show wasn't about murder.
Oh.
Basically. And he lays out his theory. He says he believes Anson found an object that contained a genie, and he got his three wishes, the boat, the manager's mouth, the invisibility. And Leslie does manage to give a pretty good skeptical, you believe all that? And then Mulder's just like, come on. Yes.
Look at me.
I'm part of the Bigfoot division. You haven't heard about me? You didn't see X-Cops?
Mm-hmm.
These guys would watch Cops, right? They probably saw X-Cops.
Absolutely.
And Mulder is very serious, and he's like, Leslie, for your own safety, you should hand over this object right now. And Leslie does pretend like he's gonna do it. He grabs what looks like a mysterious little ornate metal box, but it is notably not a rug. So it is not what the genie came in. Mulder does take the box very seriously and, like, strokes it with awe. And he tells Leslie that he's doing the right thing. And, you know, he looks pretty excited. But Leslie is, like, avoiding eye contact because he is pulling a fast one on Mulder.
Yes.
I guess, and then there's, like, just a very quick scene where later Leslie goes to the storage unit and finds the rug.
Yes. So, yes, later on, Scully is at the morgue. She's taking a bunch of pictures of Anson's painted corpse. Mulder comes in, and he says that Anson's not going anywhere. She can definitely leave. don't listen to him,
Mulder,
Scully.
That's
don't
the devil do it. Talking. He's the one who's lost all this evidence
he
before.
He knows.
What is he talking about?
So, yeah, he kind of leads her into the other room, and Scully says that she has some researchers flying in to see the body, and she is very excited. She's all, like, smiley and giggly. It's, this is just going to be devastating, you
know?
Yeah,
it really
is. She's so excited about
this.
She
really is. It's proof.
It is. Ugh. So she asks about the mysterious artifact that Mulder has, and he says that he knows that it's nothing. He just realizes it's where the two brothers keep their weed, and that's not what he wanted to show her. So he pulls up some research he's done. There is some old news footage of Benito Mussolini, news footage, I said that. But sitting right next to him in the background is the mystery woman.
Mm.
And he ran this woman's picture through the Federal Image Database and the National Archives, and he found this. He also found her in more news footage behind Richard Nixon. And so Scully's like, okay, but what do you think that this woman is actually doing with these men? And Mulder does not know, except that these were both men that gained a great deal of power and then lost it very suddenly. Related? Perhaps.
Genie time.
Yep.
Okay, so we cut back to the trailer where Leslie is decorating the apartment with the rug. So he is clearly...
It really pulls the room together.
Just like the dude. He has clearly gotten the genie for his own sick wishes. And, you know, sick wishes. And he is claiming that he's going to be so much smarter than his brother. And
Definitely.
He is, like, staring at a framed photo of Anson while he says this. Very sad. The genie, again, tries to suggest to Leslie that he could cure his inability to walk. She refers to it as his disability. And Anson takes a second to finally understand what she is implying. And she's like, you're right. I could wish for a gold wheelchair. Not what she was saying.
No.
He can't imagine changing his circumstances, yeah. You know, that's how trapped he is by the man.
Sure.
The genie is very unimpressed by him. We get a kind of an ominous feeling about what his first wish is going to be, though, because the camera pans to the picture of Anson, and Leslie talks about how he wants something more than just that. Dun, dun, dun.
I think usually in stories when people ask to bring back a dead loved one, it always goes really well.
Yes.
Nothing bad ever happens.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. So poor Scully. She has her researchers with her, very prim, proper, serious researchers. Mm-hmm. She is so excited to show them this invisible corpse. She even locked the morgue container. She's super pumped, but when she opens up the storage locker, it is empty. But it's okay because the body's invisible, right?
Yeah.
It's fine. So Scully's like, it's all right. So she pulls the drawer out and then she just kind of starts like waving her hand around. And the researchers are all watching very unimpressed. And Scully is trying so hard, but he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone.
There's not a body in there.
No.
Oh, girl.
Justice for Scully.
Yeah. She's crying.
This is devastating.
It's not good. We cut to the trailer where it is. It's morning now, and Leslie is sitting at a kitchen table eating cereal with his brother, Anson, who is no longer invisible and has returned from the dead, but he is a fucked up zombie.
Yes.
Not doing good.
He's like worse for wear.
Yeah. He's like green and covered in truck grill and stuff.
Yeah.
Leslie is also like on brand with everyone else in the episode. He's super pissed off at the genie because this isn't what he asked for, okay? But she points out that it is exactly what he asked for. All he wished was that Anson was alive again, but Anson was still hit by a truck and dead for a while. Usually that doesn't go too well for people.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie is super mad, and he's like, okay, my second wish is that I wish Anson could talk then. And the genie does try to warn him. She's like very seriously. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, you do not. No, you do not want that. But Leslie insists on the wish, and the genie grants it. And then Anson just immediately starts screaming in agonizing pain.
Yeah.
And the scene just like cuts mid-scream.
I don't know. I didn't read agonizing pain. I read more like he's been to the other side and he's so like freaked out, you know?
Okay, existential horror.
Like, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I suppose. Yeah, okay.
That's what I thought it was.
I thought it was because he like got hit by a truck.
Or that. Maybe a little bit of both.
And had an autopsy performed on him.
You know, a lot of horrible things have happened.
It's bad.
How did Scully do the autopsy? Did she cut him open? Did she...
Maybe she
pull
didn't
out
do
his
autopsy.
Invisible heart.
Maybe she didn't do an autopsy. Yeah. Maybe she just painted him. You're right.
Yeah.
So he's probably fine.
He did get hit painted by a truck. His organs.
Yeah.
But the organs are all wet, so it's gonna be like clumpy. And,
yeah, I don't think you could do that, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Gross.
Ick. So, back with Scully. Poor Scully. She is dealing with her tremendous loss. She's just got her hands over her face. She's like, I should just shoot myself. She says that she was so happy. She was so excited. And Mulder's kind of poking around, and Scully says that she doesn't know what she actually saw, and she should have known that having proof in her hands like that was way too good to be true. But Mulder says that he's pretty sure that the body being gone was the result of a wish, of course. And Scully is wondering, like, what wish? Like, who would possibly want Anson back? I think there's only one person on Earth who would.
Basically.
Yeah.
Smash cut back to mid-scream in the trailer when Anson finally stops screaming. But he still looks pretty stricken and still not good. Leslie continues.
Does he look beset?
He looks beset by death, I think.
Yeah.
And Leslie is still yelling at the genie about how this is, like, no good, this isn't fair. And, you know, Anson starts asking some good questions, like, what did you do to me? I can't feel my heart. I can't feel my blood. I belong on the other side. That kind of stuff that people always say when you bring them back from the dead.
Ugh.
And they're not even grateful.
I know.
That you burned two wishes on them. Can you imagine?
Come on.
Ingrate. There is what is nothing sharper than a serpent's tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. You know Shakespeare.
Yes.
Anyway. you know, I'm smart. So, you know, the genie is shrugging this all off. This is not her problem. She did not cause any of this. Anson just kind of starts repeating that he is really cold. Really, really cold because he's dead. And Leslie is like big mad, but he's like, fine, I can solve that problem. So he wheels over to the thermometer where he turns the heat up and he's like, you know, are you happy now? But he is out of view of Anson, who is still in the kitchen and who has now started trying to light the oven to heat himself up.
Mm-hmm.
He starts by turning on the gas and then he picks up a book of matches.
Uh-oh.
And very clumsily, because he's a zombie who got hit by a truck, tries to light a match, but he keeps like dropping them and not successfully lighting them, all while the gas is pumping into the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
In the other room, Leslie and the genie, who are not either of them paying attention to Anson, are focusing
on... I think Jen knows what's going on, right?
Oh, okay. Well, probably.
She's like looking back. I think she knows.
Okay. She probably doesn't care.
Yeah.
She's not going to die. That would make sense. So they're focused on Leslie's third and final wish, and Leslie is like really thinking out loud. He's debating what he should wish for. He's pointing out that, like, you know, turning invisible was pretty dumb, wasn't it, Anson? That was pretty dumb. And, you know, Anson is continuing to like shake and try to light this match. We see the Boo crew arrive outside and start approaching the house. And then back in the house, Leslie suddenly realizes what he should have wished for this whole time. And he says the word legs, just as Anson successfully lights a match.
And he looks really excited about it, too.
Yeah, he finally figured it out. And then we see from the Boo crew's perspective outside that the trailer just completely explodes. In a horrifying explosion of gas.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
So yeah, Mulder and Scully just kind of hit the deck. And then the rolled up rug lands right next to them on the pavement and it oofs.
It does oof.
Yeah. So later on, it's a crime scene. Mulder is across the way, I think in another trailer or something, interviewing this mystery woman. And she removes her sunglasses, and then we see that she has kind of like a rhinestone gem thing at the side of her eye. So he asks her for a name, and she says that she hasn't had one for a long time now. And so Mulder suggests, what about Jen? It's short for Janiah, isn't it?
It's funny.
And Scully comes in. She says that the fire department has recovered two bodies, both Stokes brothers. So Anson is also visible now. Of course.
She looks so sad and dead inside.
I know. So Scully really wants an explanation for how his corpse managed to make it all the way across town to end up in the fire. And Jen says that Scully should ask Mulder. He's got it all figured out. At least he thinks he does. And Scully says that she already knows what Mulder is going to say, that Jen is a 100-year-old genie. And Jen does not deny this.
No.
So Mulder says what he really can't figure out here is whether Jen is a good genie or a bad genie. Everybody knows that you're a good genie or you're a bad genie.
Yeah, there's different flavors.
Yeah, of course. Come on. Because everyone that she has come into contact with that he knows about does seem to come to a bad end, so maybe she's cursed. And Jen gets really, really offended. She's like, it's not my fault. It's all of you people that are cursed with stupidity. Mankind, every single one of you always asks for the wrong thing. Everybody asks, give me money, give me big boobs, give me a big dick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's always the wrong thing. She kind of talks about how she's been doing this for 500 years and people have not changed a bit. They do smell better, but human greed is still reigning supreme, shallowness, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess she's a genie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's open about it.
Yeah. I guess there's no reason for her to hide it.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
So do you think... Well, never mind. That doesn't make it. I was going to say, is this the first time that somebody believes her that she is a genie? But I guess everybody who makes wishes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not in the first wish. Maybe that's why everybody wastes their first wish, because they don't believe it.
Because would you? Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I feel like if you had more, I feel like once you get to like the fifth or the sixth wish, you'll really have it down.
That's when they only give you three. Yep. That's how they get you.
Yep.
Ay-yay-yay.
You gotta get Genie Premium to
exactly.
Yeah.
You still have to listen to ads.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah, because it's like the first one, you assume they're joking. The second one, you think it's a fluke,
mm-hmm.
and then you just have one left.
Yeah,
when you finally believe it,
and you gotta really figure out from the start that you have to be specific.
Yeah.
Ugh. So. Jen gives them a little bit of backstory. She says that she did used to be human. She was born in 15th century France. And one day a traveler came to her village. He was peddling rugs. And when she unrolled one, there was an Ifrit inside, which is a powerful class of genie. So I guess she's a less powerful version.
I guess.
So this genie offered her three wishes. Number one, she wished, of course, for a stout-hearted mule.
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't want a stout-hearted mule?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, she wished for a magic sack that would never run out of turnips, because this was 15th century France, and that's valuable back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess she's also making silly wishes.
This is how she knows.
She's not immune.
No.
But so for her third wish, she thought for a very long time, and then she thought she had it all figured out. She thought she was being very intelligent, and she said, "Je souhaite, I wish, for great power and a long life." And so she was granted her wish, but she was turned into a genie. She was given the mark of the djinn, which is the gemstone on her eye, and she refers to it like a prison tattoo that she can't get away from. And Scully does facepalm a little. She's like, "Oi, yeah. oi, oi." And Jen says that she really should have been more specific. And she learned it the hard way, and now she's stuck in this horrible life granting wishes to morons.
Yes.
Which would admittedly, so, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
It would
be a bummer.
Yes. So she asks whether she's under arrest, and Scully says, "No, I don't believe you're a genie, so we don't have anything to go on. You're free to go." But Jen says, "Actually, I'm not, because Mulder unrolled me." And then Mulder gets a special little gleam in his eye. Yes. He's like, "I get three wishes?" And then sirens go off. Yeah. I don't know if he can be trusted.
Absolutely not, as we'll learn. No, he's fine.
He's actually, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. Bye. So we cut to him and the genie in his apartment. We get a little POV shot from behind the fish tank. Vincent, you crazy bastard.
Oh, that's right. No. Yeah.
The genie intuits that Scully doesn't like her very much. Women, am I right? I'm just kidding. Mulder thinks this just because Scully, one, doesn't probably believe in genies, and two, is presumably drinking herself into a stupor.
Yeah, she had to go cry about her
trauma. Yeah, she's not doing well. So they're back in DC, huh? So they brought the genie back. Okay. I just realized they're in his apartment. So the genie suggests that Mulder could just forfeit his three wishes if he really doesn't, you know, want them or believe in her being a genie or whatever. And Mulder hesitates, and the genie is very smugly like, I didn't think so. I did not think you would give up the wishes.
Yeah.
And she's also like just kind of like shuffling through his things while they're talking. Because I guess, I mean, if you're a genie, that's like the one way to get your kicks, right?
Yeah.
It's creeping.
Mm-hmm.
So Mulder asks the genie what her wish would be if she was in his place. And she is reluctant to answer. But, you know, finally she said, like, she's like, you know, you're not me. I'm not you. It doesn't really matter what I would do. But, okay, if I had a wish, I would, one, wish that I had never heard the word wish before. And then I would wish to live my moment, my life moment by moment, just enjoying it for what it is, not worrying about what it isn't. And I would just sit down somewhere with a great cup of coffee and watch the world go by. But that's me. You're not me. I doubt that's your wish, Mulder.
Mulder's like, that sounds boring as shit.
Embarrassing.
I want a big yacht.
Come on. And then he gets a big yacht.
No,
he doesn't want a big yacht. Come on. He thinks he's got it all figured out. He's a little cocky about this. He thinks that the wishes are going wrong for people because they're just making wishes solely for personal gain. So the trick is to do a wish for someone else, like an altruistic gift. And so he's like, okay, I got it. I figured it out. I wish for peace on Earth. Nice. And the genie's like, okay, you sure? And he's like, yeah. What, you can't do it? And she's like, no, I can do it. It's done. And then Mulder looks pretty happy.
He's very pleased with himself.
He's like, hell yeah, I did it. And then kind of realizes that the world has gone completely silent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
shit.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So he like walks down to the street and it is full of abandoned cars and buses and restaurant tables.
Leftover situation.
Exactly. Everybody's gone except Mulder. And he like yells, I guess I should have seen this coming. Yeah. Genie does not care. And he's like, I gotta go see if Scully's at the office.
The whole world disappears. His first priority is finding Scully.
That's pretty
he's
cute.
He's very ride or die.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah. So Mulder heads to the X-File or the FBI building. He runs around the empty place. There's nobody there. He's calling for Scully. I do love that he knew that he wouldn't find Scully at home.
No.
He first went to work. He knows she's going to be there. That's true love, you know?
She's got to be at the bar right now, though, right?
At the what?
At the bar because of the situation. Isn't she sad?
I think she would just go back to the office and start writing up her report, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's Scully.
I don't know. True. I mean, it's Scully, right?
I mean, you're right.
Yeah. A normal person would go to the bar and drown their sorrows, but not Scully.
She's just tip-tap typing away.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, she would be if Mulder hadn't wished her out of existence.
Tip-tap typing didn't disappear from this realm.
Yeah.
I can't believe he wished her out of existence. That's messed up.
That is messed up.
Because he doesn't care about her that much.
Wow.
Hmm.
So he can't find Scully, and then he does try Skinner's empty office, but nobody's there either, so this totally sucks. So he calls for Jen, and she appears. She's sitting in Skinner's chair. He does not let people sit in his chair.
No.
So that's quite daring of her. So Mulder's like, what the hell is this? And Jen says that it is exactly what he asked for, peace on Earth. And Mulder is very, very offended. He's like, you know damn well this isn't what I wanted. But he wasn't specific enough. So Jen kind of scoffs and she's like, okay, so what you're saying is you want me to change the hearts of 6 billion people. She says that not one single religion in history has been able to pull it off, not Allah or Buddha or Christ, but he'd like to do it in his name so he can feel really good about himself. And Mulder then gets a little flustered. He's like, well, I didn't say that. I think the Jesus surgery went to his head a little bit.
He had a Jesus surgery. He is Jesus in the show.
He's
in his defense.
He's technically Jesus.
In his defense. So, it's not his fault.
Yeah. But Jen's a little more practical. She thinks that he is being grotesquely egotistical. And they kind of have an impasse. And so she says, well, I bet you wish that you hadn't made your first wish. And Mulder's like, yes, since you butchered my original intention. But now he's really mad. So he's like, and another thing, you have a horrible attitude, but, you know, not all people are that stupid. I think there's another possibility here. And that's that you're a huge bitch. And then, of course, while he's ranting and raving, we see the Skinner and his whole posse are sitting right behind him.
Have appeared back in the world. Yes.
At least Jen has comic timing.
Yes. That's very funny.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that.
I think it would have been funny if Skinner and the rest had just continued with their meeting and paid no attention, because Mulder's always
That's just Mulder.
Doing this.
He often runs into the room and just screams about people being bitches.
I mean, you know he does.
Yeah. I like to think that this was not an FBI meeting, but was like a Hollywood production meeting.
Oh,
right. So maybe they're not used to Mulder quite yet.
Okay.
He's definitely using company resources for this, right?
Well, then Skinner would want Mulder in because he's providing the flavor.
Ooh, that's a good
he's
point.
He's like, look at this. This guy's off the chain.
Yeah, remember that movie about him? He really is like this.
Yeah.
That's true.
So yeah. So maybe it's a plus.
Checks out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did Skinner use a genie to wish for success at his movie?
He didn't need a genie.
Oh.
Come on.
He's just that good.
Come on.
Okay.
He knows what the people want.
That's true.
Come on.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. Mulder looks sheepish, but that is that.
Yeah.
We cut to the X-Files office where Mulder is typing up like a legal contract of a wish while the genie looks on at his computer, and it's, you know, got your wherefores and your clauses and such forth.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm going to make sure that you can't butcher my wish. I'm going to make sure you can't like interpret it to mean that I want people's eyes to grow on stalks, which I thought would be pretty fun.
Yeah.
We talked about, but apparently he doesn't want that. Scully does walk into the office and looks a little annoyed at the genie being here, but she ignores the genie and tells Scully tells Mulder that Skinner called and sounded a little concerned. So, you know, is everything all right, Mulder? And he asks Scully if she remembers disappearing off the face of the earth for about an hour earlier today, and she says, nope, don't remember that. So he's like, well, then I guess everything's all right.
Yeah.
Scully asks the genie to give them a minute or two alone, and then the genie does like magically disappear, and Scully looks a little freaked out that she managed to disappear magically, but she still doesn't believe she's a genie.
Yes.
Damn it. Scully is like, you know, at this point, I don't even know if I really even saw that invisible body. And Mulder's like, oh my God.
Come on.
Come on, Scully, come on. Come on. You painted an invisible man.
Yeah.
Scully's like,
she has the pictures, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, I guess it's just a picture of a
you're right,
empty cart. Presumably she has like half painted pictures, right?
Yeah,
I don't know,
I feel like that still proves something.
She's being annoying at this point.
Sure.
You can understand Mulder
being
like, come on, you literally touched this body. But she's
do you think
back
he tried to
skeptic.
Wish for Scully to believe in the paranormal, and she's like, I can't do that, actually.
That would actually be really funny.
I can't do that.
If everything that you've done so far hasn't worked,
yeah,
there's no way, Mulder.
Yeah.
But Scully kind of like, you know, deflates and sits down in the chair, and she's like, okay, say you're right, and this actually is a genie. If that is the case, then you making all of these wishes is super dangerous. What are you doing? And Mulder's like, no. I got it figured out. See, the trick is to be super specific and just leave no loopholes, and then I'm going to make the world a better place, and it's going to be amazing. And he does seem really excited about this, like, perfect world that he is inventing. And, you know, Scully lays down some thoughtfulness, some theory. She's like, you know, maybe the entire point of our lives is working to achieve a better world, and it's not a process that one man should try to circumvent using a wish. And Mulder does sigh, but clearly Scully's gotten to him. He's like, okay, well, I guess you've got a point. Fine. So Scully does leave him to go, I guess, like, report to Skinner that Mulder's just being Mulder or whatever. And so she leaves him
Mulder
to ponder.
Being Mulder.
MBM. Mulder being Mulder.
There you go. Like a stamp.
Exactly. Yeah. On all reports. They have, yes. like, a home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mulder thinks the genie returns, and Mulder turns off his computer with the big long wish that he had written, and he just smiles at her because he knows what his third wish is going to be.
Okay. So we check back in with Mulder and Scully, who are hanging out in Mulder's apartment, and they're just having like a special little movie night. Mulder's starting up Caddyshack. He's got popcorn, although Scully didn't want any butter, which is just un-American.
Genuinely insane.
Yes.
Not gonna lie.
But yeah, Mulder's like, yeah, Caddyshack is a classic American movie, Scully. You are going to love it. And Scully's like, yeah, whatever. That's what every guy says. It's just a guy movie. And Mulder says that when she invites him over to her place, they can watch a chick movie. But she doesn't seem like she's actually upset. She's just ribbing him.
She's ragging on him.
Yeah.
Goofing.
So they open some beers, and Scully asks what the occasion is, and Mulder's like, no occasion, I just wanted to hang. And so they clink their beers, they start up the movie, and Mulder's like, well, Scully, I don't know if you noticed that I didn't actually make the world a better place. And Scully says that she did indeed notice, but, you know, she's fairly happy, so that's something. And then she does ask him what his final wish was, and he smiles at her, but does not answer.
A mysterious little smile.
Secret. Mm-hmm. Little secret wish.
That's cute.
Yeah.
So we get a little coda to the episode. We cut to the genie, but oh my goodness, her rhinestone is gone. No longer a genie. She's now human, and she is sitting in a cafe with a nice cup of coffee, watching the world go by, living moment by moment.
All right.
Just like her wish.
Look at that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Aw.
Aw.
Fiend.
The end.
Love that.
Which is what fiend means.
Yeah, but in France.
Yeah. I just wanted to translate that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And you know what? I would like to translate some more in our next section, which is Who the Crow.
Quien es
nope.
La Crew?
Let's see. I'm going to translate Who the Crew right now.
Thank you.
French.
Qui est l'équipage? Alors, qui est l'équipage, mademoiselle?
I'm going to tell you.
Merci.
The title of this episode, Je suis hate, means I wish in French.
Mm. I wish I knew that before I watched the episode last week.
Okay.
When I stumbled over what it meant.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
So this is Vince Gilligan's directorial debut.
Directorial? It sounded ominous. Who's dying? Direct sounds like Necromantic 2. Necromantic 2 was directed.
Was directed.
You know
what
I mean?
That is very true. Yeah. Okay, it's his directorial
no,
debut.
<I'm> sorry. No, I liked it. I'm sorry.
I think he always wanted to try directing an episode, but he kept putting it off because he didn't think he had the chops. But as he thought at the time that this was the show's last season, he was like, let's do it. I can't ruin this show any more than it's already been ruined, Chris.
But say it in a Vince voice.
Chris, I need you to let me direct an episode of this television program. Because we're going down in flames, Chris. I know you feel it. I know we both feel it. Just give me this, Chris.
Hand in a lovable hand.
Oh, wait, now it's sweet. Yeah.
It's sweet. What is he sounds like, I don't think you had ever watched Adventure Time, did you?
No.
There's like an elephant named Tree Trunks who sounds like that. And I like that Vince Gilligan becomes Tree Trunks in our impressions.
Okay. I was always thinking Mickey Mouse, but
yeah. A cartoon character for sure.
Yes.
But that's just what he sounds like.
What is Vince if not a cartoon character?
Ha, I'm Vince. A cartoon character.
He's got a big mustache that could lend itself to a cartoon character. I feel like he could be easily caricaturized.
You could caricaturize a Vince.
Which is another word.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Caricaturize. Caricaturize.
Mm-hmm.
And directorize.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So yes. So he kind of like wrote up his script, and then after he finished that, he realized that he had written in a lot of things that were going to be very difficult to direct. He's like, I did not intend this.
I realize why Kim and Bobby hate me.
Yeah, basically. He's like, yeah, before I realized it, I was blowing up a trailer, I was having a truck hit an invisible man, all sorts of genie effects. And so he was like, he was worried. He said, I'm going to be exposed as an imposter when I show up set, which is very sad.
I'm an imposter.
Yeah. He said he was having like hysterical, nervous breakdowns before he started recording directing.
Yeah.
He was very nervous.
And everyone made fun of him when he got on set and yelled at him and ignored him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
That's messed up.
Yeah, that is.
They shouldn't have
That's
done
just
that.
Mean.
That's just
Stop it.
Mean.
Not to Vince.
Come on.
Ugh. So the scene where Scully's applying the yellow powder to the body, there were all sorts of digital techniques they used. So they had the cast of the actor with like a blue head, on top of him. And then she sprinkled the dust on top of the blue head. And then they like shot a bunch of, subsequent shots of just Scully. And then they put them all together in post-production and, all sorts of junk.
Computer magic.
That's what he said. He walked in and he's like, I need you to cook me up some computer magic. And he said, anything for you, Vince.
I'm getting weirder sounding.
I think there's a helium leak in here or something. We should check that out. All right, bye. He floats out of the room.
Oh no, because of the
on a cloud.
Because of the helium.
Oh no.
Vince. Oh, no. R.I.P. And then he made Breaking Bad.
Shit.
The end.
Oh no.
And that's the hellscape we could have lived in.
Wait, now I'm worried. Okay, no, we're good. We're good. I was worried that he would be gone forever, but there's another Vince episode coming up.
Okay.
So. I was just worried that he'd float off. And
I know.
He's gone.
Never know. He could.
But we're good. We're good.
Okay. Whew, yep, thank God.
Yep. So for the Peace on Earth scene, they had to block off 8 blocks of downtown Los Angeles. So they did it like really, really early on a Sunday morning when there would be basically nobody around. And it was almost a perfect shot until some random guy walked on screen and ruined it.
Jesus Christ.
God. Craig.
I hate that guy.
God.
That was me, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm taking a lot of credit this episode.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay. Well, shall we move on to Blazer Watch? The segment where we talk about fashion?
I would love to, Vince.
Thank you.
Do you think Vince has a lot to say about fashion?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, okay.
I bet he wears the same 7 outfits every week.
He wears 7 every week?
Maybe not.
I don't think he wears 7 that might be things too every
many.
Week, yeah.
That might be too many.
Maybe 4.
Fair enough.
4 or 5.
That's a reasonable amount. Yeah. He was on capsule wardrobes before it got popular.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a thing where you don't, it doesn't matter. Okay. You only own like 30 pieces of clothing or whatever, and they're all mix and matchable, so you don't have to own a lot of clothes. It doesn't matter.
Same.
Anyway.
All right.
And he's into it. He's got a Pinterest board.
Of course.
He's constantly talking about showrunner chic.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever that is.
Oh, I think you know.
I don't, but
oh,
okay.
Jodhpurs? What did old directors wear? They were always wearing like jodhpurs or whatever.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, maybe something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, Blazer Watch. The genie has some good style.
Yeah.
She's got like pale skin and blue eyes, but like really black, like Cleopatra hair, I guess you would describe it as.
Yeah.
Like the short bangs. And like dark sunglasses and a black leather jacket over a black turtleneck and some red lipstick. It's a pretty good look.
She's very cool.
Yeah.
Leslie has a pretty radical Leonard Skinner shirt on.
Yeah.
I think he has 2.
Mm.
He has like 2 shirts. Weren't they both Leonard Skinner shirts?
I noticed one of them was. I believe that the second one was too.
I think they both.
Feels
were,
right.
So.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Scully's got a nice green sweater on at one point. I think she's worn that before, but it's still nice.
Probably. I don't have anything else.
She's also just got her cool black coat again, but that's all I got. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to FBI Do, the segment where we analyze the development of the romantic relationship between the Boo crew. We do it on a doomsday clock scale, and we give examples from the episode at hand to make sense of that. 10 minutes to midnight, far from love, 0 minutes to midnight, right in the atomic blast zone of love. Who would we say is 10 minutes to midnight in this episode?
I have Scully. Mm-hmm. I'm keeping her evidence.
Just like Mulder.
Yeah.
He knows what that's like.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. I said Anson and his boss, whose mouth he took.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The boss and his mouth.
Oh, yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. All right. Who would we say is 0 minutes to midnight in this episode?
Vince and funky little dudes.
Hell yeah.
Or Jen and a damn fine cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She knows what's up.
Yeah.
Would she get along with Dale Cooper?
You know, I feel like she would.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
She's chill. Well, Cooper's not quite chill.
He's, no, but they're both interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd be fascinated.
My heart wants to say yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I said Anson and Leslie. I mean, they're brothers. They seem to have a good relationship, though. They seem
hanging
to get
out.
Along. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. It gets strained when Leslie brings Anson back from the Vale.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he did it with good intentions.
Yeah.
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 But that's always what happens with wishes. Good intentions.
Mm-hmm. Road to hell.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you think that Dale Cooper would successfully wish? Like, would he win the wish game?
Ooh.
He would either be good at it or terrible.
Yeah, I feel like he'd burn his first two. Mm-hmm. And then the third one would be really good, but the genie would still find some way to mess it up, right?
Okay.
And then it would all go bad.
So just like everyone else.
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know if you can escape it by being clever.
All right.
You can only... Well, but he's kind.
Yeah. He's just like a special little dude.
Maybe he could. Maybe he would be the one person who could.
He's just very odd,
you
know?
He's a special little dude.
Yeah.
He is very strange.
I don't know.
It was delightful to meet him. I didn't even know. Like, the cultural osmosis didn't get to me. I knew people liked Dale Cooper, but I didn't know why.
He was just so special.
So strange.
Yeah.
That's such a delightful way.
Yeah.
Love him.
Still haven't seen The Return.
No, I'm doing it real style where I wait
all
28
right,
years
okay.
or whatever.
Okay.
So, wait, how long is between the original run of Twin Peaks and The Return?
Lord.
Was it like 95 to 2017?
Something like that. Okay, Twin Peaks. Okay, so it's... Canceled in 1991, returned in 2017. So what is that?
91, okay.
17 plus 9.
A damn long time.
Yeah. 26.
26. Yeah. I know how to do math. Yeah. So I'm going to have to wait until the 2060? Is that right?
No.
What? How does
2060?
Time work? How does
it's
time
like
work?
35 years.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, wait.
2040.
Yeah, you're right.
Something. 2050. 2052?
Sure.
We gotta move on.
What is wrong with it?
We gotta keep going.
I can't watch The Return for a long time,
right,
basically.
Okay.
So, where would we put the Boo crew on the scale?
The moon? We gotta get rid of the scale.
It doesn't make any sense anymore. They're having a special little movie night. That's cute.
Yeah, they're having it. That's fun.
I don't know.
Moon, I guess, or a zero. The scale is nothing.
Flirting. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, I think we might have to retire our scale.
It was really a will they, won't they, and then they probably did, more or less.
Yeah.
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 I mean, there's only, you know, we could finish out this season and then see where we're at, I guess.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
All right.
So one more.
One more remains, at least. Okay, but that's that. And oh my gosh, the monster truck is,
I gotta stop screaming every time.
It floated away on helium with Vince. Vince was in the truck.
Oh my god.
Oh no. Oh no. All right, who would we say is this week's monster of the week?
Well, I do have a special little guy.
Oh, sorry, who's the special little guy?
Special little guys.
Oh, yeah.
Anson and Leslie.
They are your type. They are your type.
They're special.
You do like a Vince Gilligan boy.
I do.
Yeah, fair enough.
My monster of the week, I have the IRS because they should just let Anson keep his yachts.
Oh, yeah. I hate when the government tries to make me pay my taxes.
That's right. Let him keep his giant yacht that he can't use.
Yeah, it's sort of like a, you know, like enough of a punishment.
Yeah, yeah.
Having it's got it. A giant yacht, yeah.
And somebody graffitied, "You suck" on it.
Which is very funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Do you think it was the genie?
Maybe.
It's not her style.
No.
No.
She's too cool for that.
She's got better stuff to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And who... Do you say your monster?
Yes.
Yeah.
The IRS.
He literally just said the monster. I got distracted.
I know.
I'm sorry. I'm always just thinking about what I'm going to say next, and yeah. I never listen.
Understood. Understood.
No, wait, I'm sorry. I don't do that.
What did you say?
Huh? I'm sorry that I didn't remember.
Well, who's your monster of the week?
My monster is...
It's Amanda. No.
My monster is Leslie because he stole Scully's proof and made her look a fool in front of the Harvard medical researchers.
That's fair. That's fair.
And it upset my girl, and that upset me.
Yeah.
I know he didn't mean it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are consequences.
There are consequences to your actions. And when they hurt my girl, I go rabid.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
All right. Well, next we move into our favorite scene or moment from the episode. And this is 21, right? So it is your turn to go first. So what was your favorite scene and or moment from Je Suis?
I quite enjoyed the scene with the brothers and Jen in the trailer where Anson is just like debating with Leslie over what his last wish is going to be. I don't know. I just thought the brothers played off each other very well, and Jen also played very well off of them. And, her exasperation with them was very funny, and you know, it was a fun scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy who plays Leslie? He's famous, right? Will
is he?
Sasser. Yeah. He's someone I know.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, he was someone I know.
Will Sasso.
Okay, so it is him.
Who is this man?
You know, it's Will Sasso.
He's Doug in How I Met Your Mother? I've barely seen the show. Is that somebody?
He was on Mad TV. That's probably where I know him. Yeah.
I feel like I don't really know any of these things.
Well, he was mover number one in Happy Gilmore.
Oh, of course.
So.
Of course I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
must just be
Mad
TV.
He was on an episode of The X-Files.
Oh, which one?
Je souhaite.
Oh, what does that mean?
It means I wish. Oh, recurring. He's on Justified.
Wait, was he really?
Recurring cast, season 5, Al Sura.
Al Sura.
Who's that?
Season 5.
What was happening in season 5?
What was that? Was that the Crow season, I think? The Crows.
Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah. Al Sura.
I don't remember him.
He was Unjustified. Everybody I recognize from the X-Files was just Unjustified, weren't they?
Yeah, that feels right.
Do you think Vince Gilligan could have showrun Justified? And ended it better?
Yes. His tone is a little different than Justified is.
Yeah, so it would have been different.
But I think he could have... They could have just brought him in for the ending.
Just the ending.
He would have been able to end it very well.
Just the ending.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, both great endings. He could have fixed Justified.
I wish.
Yeah.
Some people like it.
And some people are wrong.
Yeah, and that is a Venn diagram that looks very much like a circle. And that's okay.
Yeah.
It's fine. Anyway, okay, that's enough of that. Anything else on your favorite moments?
No.
Okay.
I was doing it for you. I just had one.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoyed Skinner's office. That was cute, of course. Yeah. You know, it's obvious what's going to happen, but it's still a good time. So, come on. And I did like small moments throughout the episode. And I'll get into it more in the next section, but there were just like small choices in, I would say, probably the directing that I found delightful. So, you know, there were a few things.
Vince.
Vince, I guess I like his directing style.
And this was his first time.
I'm so proud of him.
And he was able to do it even though he was floating away on a cloud of helium the whole time.
He just left. He, like, dropped notes to people.
Do you think they just had to have, like, a PA, like, he had, like, a string tied around his wrist and they were holding him to make sure he didn't float away
so
like a balloon?
Don't you let go of me, Jeremy.
Oh, no.
I have to direct. This is my first one.
Oh.
Did Chris Carter give him the helium? Would he do that?
I guess I don't know what, because he knows that Vince is going to make his show better.
Yeah.
So he would want to, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, you're right.
Unless he hates Vince. Maybe he knew that Vince was going to go on to have Breaking Bad.
And he was mad about that?
Yes.
Huh.
I don't know.
What a jerk.
What a jerk.
He probably didn't do that, huh? If I had to guess.
Well, Chris wouldn't have been able to do it because he doesn't have hands.
Exactly.
So he wouldn't be able to turn the helium
tank.
Sure. Yeah.
That he's fed into Vince Gilligan's trailer? I don't know.
Sure.
How did he give Vince? It doesn't matter. He didn't do it.
Maybe he invited... Well, he didn't do it. Never was going to come up with a situation where he did.
Well, then who did it? Who on the set of The X-Files in season 7 would have it in for Vince? And
would it be Kim?
Oh.
Would Kim do it?
Don't come for me, bitch. That's my job.
That's
you
right.
Don't see me writing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah?
Kim?
I don't know.
His army of insects that he's cultivated from networking
throughout
the years.
That's how he did it. He had every single little cockroach was holding one helium atom.
Oh,
and they climbed in Vince's window and they threw the helium atoms at him.
Oh. Ow. I'm being hit by helium atoms. Ow.
But his voice keeps going up and up.
Ouch, I'm being hit by helium atoms.
That is so... What is the matter with Kim Manners?
Kimothy,
what a jerk.
You cannot do that to coworkers. I trust me, HR has talked to me about it
because
I did do that.
Sure.
Once. I'm gonna be honest with you, I did do that
just once.
No, they gave me a warning the first time, and then I got put on a helium improvement plan to ask me to please stop.
Yeah,
sorry. The cockroaches don't listen to me. They have their own minds. If they want to throw helium at coworkers that I happen to be in feuds with, it's not my fault.
It's just what happens.
Don't feud with me.
Just don't do it.
I'm always feuding.
I know this. I know.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to rating the episode?
Let's do it.
On a scale of 0 to 5 alien head emojis, what are you giving Je Suis The penultimate episode of season 7.
Thank you for putting that little stank on
it. I want to add a little importance to it. A little je ne sais quoi.
More French.
That means...
More.
You know, je ne sais quoi.
It means je ne sais quoi.
It means je ne sais quoi.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good Monster of the Week to close the season out with. I think... Was it last week? I was like, I feel like there's always like a bad episode in the penultimate episode. And now I'm like, I don't know where I got that from.
Mm.
That might not be true. Because I feel like we had like, what, Demons? Demons was good.
I like Demons.
So maybe I totally made that up.
I feel like you were talking about like the run up to the end, right?
Okay.
So like
perhaps.
The last like...
Oh, yeah, because we had like Field Trip.
I liked Field Trip.
Folia Do was good.
I don't know
what I'm talking about.
Man, I can't believe.
Never mind. Wet Wired.
That was great.
Yeah, okay.
The lies keep coming.
I'm just
and
saying
they don't
shit.
Stop coming.
I'm just saying. So, in fact, we always have a great penultimate episode.
But the third from the end? Is that usually bad?
Elegy was fine.
Yeah.
Pine Bluff variant was pretty good. I liked that one.
Yeah.
Three of a Kind was pretty good.
Yeah, what were you on about?
I don't know.
Really?
Well, Fight Club was bad.
Oh, yeah, Fight Club
was bad.
Well, that was... You can't use season 7. God damn it.
It was bad.
That's true, but there's a lot of extrapolation happening based on Fight Club being bad.
I think perhaps I was just thinking of... There's always like a mid-season slump.
Yeah.
I think that's what I was thinking of.
That's fair.
But we're finishing strong, and that's great.
Yes.
Obviously I like Vince Gilligan. We've covered that one, I think.
Oh, I think we covered that one. You like me. You really like me.
Well, not that much.
Oh.
because it was me that put the helium in your trailer.
Why is it as a 8-6-year-old?
Yeah.
However old you were.
It was an inducement. I was like, you got to get off the X-Files so you can start thinking about your next program.
I can't wait. Why is that you as a 6-year-old? You
sound older. I can't wait. You sound
more Southern and older than Vince Gilligan.
That was me. Yeah. And I was 8.
I can't wait for Breaking Bad. I need it. My name's Ella.
Yeah.
And I need Breaking Bad.
That's incredible. That's exactly what I sounded like.
Give me my Jesse Pinkman.
Get me that.
Get him for me. And do not kill him after season one, Vince. I know you're freaked.
That's what I said. I was holding up a little helium at him. I'm like, yeah. Vince. That didn't happen.
Okay.
But what is true is that I do enjoy Vince Gilligan's stuff. I like his, like, you know, he's got like an off-kilter kind of tone. I feel like we talked about how Chris Carter isn't that great at comedy. I think Vince is pretty good at comedy because he doesn't go like too goofy. It's just like slightly off-kilter, slightly funny without going like super over the top. Yeah, we already talked about Anson and Leslie are some classic Vince characters. You know, he loves some dumb trailer park stoner boys. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I probably would have watched like a whole episode of just Leslie and Anson hanging out. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
But I guess that's what we got with Breaking Bad. That was just Badger and Skinny Pete.
If this came out like 5 years later, they might have had a little like web exclusive 5-minute video of...
Yeah.
Ansel and Leslie hanging out.
That was like a short-lived little thing they did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there were some pretty bad Breaking Bad ones.
Oh, were there?
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever watched them.
I don't know. They weren't great.
Okay. What did we get? Like, Jesse's music video?
Yeah. Well, that one was fun, of course. Yeah. I don't know. There's just like a weird bonus scene of Jesse and Saul at some point. I don't know. I don't remember the specifics. I just remember them not being very great.
Fair.
But thankfully, we were saved with that because they were not doing that in 2000. Yes. I also thought the actress that played the genie was really great. She was like very caustic and sarcastic and witty. I feel like she was one of the better guest actors on the show. The episode also has some great Scully moments. I do love whenever Scully gets to be the comic relief because she doesn't get to be very often. She just wanted her evidence so badly. And she didn't get it.
Yeah.
I think it was the highlight was really her little like ooh face when she was painting the face.
Yeah.
I also could have used more of Mulder and Jen at the end. I feel like they also played off each other very well. I liked how like when Mulder was like talking through how he was gonna outsmart it and be really altruistic and he was gonna like win the game. Like she was enjoying it. She was like smiling. She was like, "You're not, but I appreciate the effort."
Yeah.
So, kind of like the total opposite of how she was with the brothers. So, yeah, I don't know. I could have used more of them. Make it into a 2-parter. That's too much. That's too much.
3-parter?
A 6-parter, maybe.
Entire show. It's just I Dream of Jeannie.
It's not enough. Not enough content for that.
Oh, God.
But that's okay. So, yeah, there's also some, like, really gruesome moments. Like, the boss's mouth was really disgusting, which I appreciated. Yeah, I enjoyed that Mulder was trying to outsmart her by trying to figure out the trick to doing the wishes when you know that, like, many, 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 many others have tried to do the exact same thing. You know, there isn't, like, one single wish, no matter how, like, legalistic or specific, that would be able to solve all the world's problem. And you kind of can guess that even if he made it, like, really, 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 really specific, it would still turn sour somehow because that's just how it goes. In a way, the solution to the problem was to be altruistic, but like in a really small, specific way. And he gave Jen what she wanted. She got her freedom at the end. It was like a sweet little ending. Fun episode. I did give it 4 alien head emojis. All right. Solid.
All right.
Good.
All right.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yes. I feel like the like Gillian Anderson's physical acting in this episode was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like you touched on it a little bit, but like the ooh face, the I don't know, when she's like talking about small mouth disease, she like scrunches her like arms up to like indicate it, and then I don't know, like Duchovny plays off of that and like sort of mocks that as well. That's cute. She's like when she sees the invisible corpse and then goes to get the yellow dust, she's like creeping over like a little goblin. Yeah, she like was. Go get it. I don't know. There's just a lot of that, like small touches, or like when she's got her like head in her hands. She's just very funny. Yes. In this episode. I liked that we got to experience Scully experiencing like fully and completely Mulder's pain of losing evidence and looking like a fool in front of important people. poor girl.
Also, those guys seemed like they were no fun.
They were not fun. Harvard, more like
Blarvard.
Norvert. Yeah, Blarvard. Take that. Hate them. You can see a lot of like, yeah, Vince Gilligan DNA in this one, like his directorial style.
Please.
As we talked about a bit, you know, the POV shot from the fish tank. I feel like we get that exact same thing in Better Call Saul with his fish tank. I talked about
that. Was a little X-Files reference when they put that in Better Call Saul?
Maybe.
Might have been.
I don't know. I can't remember. Was it serving a metaphorical purpose in Better Call Saul?
I don't know.
I don't have to rewatch it.
Remember them really commenting on the fish that much.
Could have been a Mulder. Yeah. Could have been a Mulder. But yeah, I also like, yeah, the characters themselves were very Vince Gilligan-y. I already talked about it, but like even just the springing of the little flexible pole when it gets caught in a door frame just felt like something that would happen on Breaking Bad too. The message of, yeah, like you can't make these big sweeping changes on behalf of everyone with a snap of your fingers and actually have something done is, you know, feels legit. Like, yes, the process of making a better world is one that requires all people by its very definition, because you are living in a society with other people and you can't just wish that everyone was fundamentally different so that it's easier for you. So it makes sense.
Are you saying that we live in a society?
I really hate to break this to you.
Yeah.
I don't think you should have to hear this, but we do live in a society.
No!
I'm sorry.
No!
I'm sorry.
Okay.
There's other people and everything.
Damn it.
I know. All right. It makes it really inconvenient to get stuff done, but also it's literally the whole point of life. So, you know, that was fun. you know. Yeah, it was a good little episode. We watched like the director's commentary also with Vince Gilligan.
Yeah.
And that was much more engaging than some of the previous ones we have experienced. And I think as you were talking and saying that you could have done with more of both the brothers and also more of like Mulder and the genie interacting, it reminded me that I think Vince Gilligan said they cut like 11 minutes or something ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure there was more, and it was just, like, too long. So there probably was enough content to do a two-parter. It just wouldn't actually have made sense for the nature of the story. And it was probably a stronger episode because of editing and killing your darlings and all that, blah, blah, blah. But it is true that the brothers were very fun characters. And then, of course, by design, they had to disappear by Act 3, basically.
Yeah.
But... yes, all good stuff. Had a great time. It was fun. I thought it was a strong penultimate episode. I don't know what the next episode will bring, but this was a good ending point for... I'm assuming the next one is Mythology, probably.
It's a finale.
Yeah.
So
this was, felt like a good ending for the season of Monster of the Weeks. And I gave it 4.5 out of 5 alien head emojis.
Right.
I just like a special little tone. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it balanced really well, like the comedic and the more serious elements.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Liked it.
Yeah. Lovely.
Thanks, Vince.
Thank you, Vince. I'm sorry we made fun of you so much, but I'm not sorry enough to stop.
We're making fun of our weird little fake fins in our in our brains, to be fair.
Yes. Yeah. All right. That's all?
I think that's all I got.
Okay. Well, let us move on. Next week, it's a big week. We're talking about the finale, season 7, episode 22, Requiem.
That doesn't sound good.
We got some big stuff coming up.
Okay.
Yeah. So gird yourself. Prepare yourself.
I'm girded.
Okay.
I'm girded.
All right.
But I'm nervous.
All right.
Goodness. Well, if you have any questions, thoughts, ideas, recipes, etc., you can send us an email at scullynationpod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram, both of those also at Scully Nation Pod. And again, like we said at the opening, this is your last chance to submit questions for our Season 7 wrap-up. You got to submit those by Sunday, April 21st, or you have to be silent forever.
Forever.
And
you will get, if you don't, you will get small mouth.
What if you got small mouth?
I mean, that would suck, but it wouldn't happen in the span of a couple seconds.
Or, I don't know, it seemed to happen to this guy, didn't it? Never got any resolution on that poor guy. He's just
fucked.
Reconstructed mouth.
Yeah.
Mulder didn't think about that one. No, he didn't. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
That guy flew all the way to D.C. to see them, too.
That's true.
Man.
Oh, well.
I commented on it while we were talking about the episode, but I like that they brought the genie back. They didn't just, like... Mulder didn't want to rush his wishes.
Oh,
he wasn't like, I'm going to figure these out in Missouri.
That's
I'm going
right.
back.
That's another mistake that everybody makes. They just do it right away. You gotta have a think on it.
Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, our intro and outro music is by Groovemaster Putz, and you can get more of their music on Bandcamp.
Also, if you are enjoying our show, please consider giving us a rating and a review on your podcatcher of choice and spread the word about the pod. Tell your friends, your family, and the genie you have unrolled from a rug about the podcast, because when she's rolled up in that rug, she's got a lot of time on her hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know she was listening to the Walkman in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've been your host, Amanda.
And I've been Ella, and please remember, trust no one except for us.